Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Erica Oppenheimer is a test prep coach and author of the book Acing It, A Mindful Guide to Maximum Results on Your College Admissions Test. The book is now in its second edition. She joins me in the studios at our studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Erica, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Visiting from New York City, right? Yes. That's where you live now full time, but a South Dakota girl originally.
Mm-hmm. I went to Lincoln High School in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and now I live in New York City.
And I think last time we got all distracted talking about our favorite teacher, Tom Lubeck. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to shout out to Tom now.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Lubeck.
He's the reason that we do what we do today. A good teacher just makes all the difference in
Absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely.
All right. So tell me what kind of student you were.
When I was in high school, yeah. I was a very good student in the sense that I got good grades and I was involved in activities. On the outside, it seemed like I was doing really well. On the inside, I was consistently stressed out, kind of telling myself the story that I will be happy after that test or after that paper finishes or after that audition is done, presuming that it goes my way. And ultimately, you know, that works only so well and for so long because I felt unhappy and I felt like there had to be a better way of moving through life. But that wasn't a realization that I had until I got into college and was, you know, was running that cycle a few more times. But, you know, it worked pretty well in terms of getting into college and in terms of being successful, again, from the outside. But
right.
on the inside, it was tiring.
When you work with students today, are the people who are drawn to your book and giving you feedback, drawn to, you know, needing a coach, are they the high achievers? Or are they the kids who are really struggling to figure out, like, how do I approach this test?
It's some of both. I think that one of the thoughts that many, if not most of us deal with is this, am I good enough? Am I doing a good enough job? And that can be there whether you are the, again, on the outside, the overachiever who's always looking for the next thing to do well on, or it can be there if you've had a pattern of more struggle and trying to figure out your way to negotiate academic challenges or life challenges with greater skill.
When did you sort of hit your wall where you couldn't, muscle your way through all the work and the study that needed to be done to get that great grade and say, okay, I achieved that? Even though there was a cost to doing it, when did you hit the wall to say, now I can throw everything I am at this and I'm not being successful?
I don't know. I think I was kind of lucky in that I don't know that I had a specific bottom or a specific low point. When I went on a study abroad program, I met another classmate who had been raised meditating. And so it was more for me that I just started finding breadcrumbs that were pointing me in a better direction rather than hitting a bottom and needing to crawl my way out of it. So in that sense, I think I was lucky. But I will say, when I was in high school, I took the SAT and I had mono and I didn't realize it until subsequently I went to a doctor and he told me that I had mono. And so it was, for me, it was very much a pattern of I didn't know that I was feeling unwell. Like for me, being tired, being stressed out, that was my normal. And so when I got to college, when I started meeting new people and having new experiences, it was just more of an awareness of a different way of being than an actual bottom.
Go back and coach that student for a minute. What do you want to tell her, to the kid who is really just, you know, so focused on the tasks ahead of her that need to be done? And, you know, I don't want to get off on a sidetrack, but people say you put that pressure on yourself. But a lot of that pressure does come from outside as well, where people see what you're capable of and you know, encourage you to do one more thing. Well, what would you say to that girl? Where should she begin?
Well, it does feel really good to see results.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think that's something that we should take away from. Like, the results feel really good, but the goal shouldn't be to minimize that. It should be to feel good along the way to getting the results. I think first thing I would tell her is to take a nap, maybe. I don't know if 17-year-old self me, yeah, or 16-year-old
self would have listened, yeah.
would have been interested in meditating or any of the things that I do today. Maybe she would, but self-care. But again, I think that some of it just comes down to hearing that you're enough, that you've got this, that it'll work out for you. I think the last chapter of my book is a lot of what I would have told my 16-year-old self, what I wish that I'd known, that, you know, everything is working out, and do the things that are inspiring and exciting to you. And I also think that that idea that you can, there's a sort of Zen way of putting forth effort or inspired action where you're not doing things from a place of stress. You're doing them from a place of focus. And mm-hmm. that we often conflate the two. We think that stress is an indication that we're working hard or that we care. But just the question of, is it possible that you can make progress or take action from a place that is more centered and more calm and more focused, but without all of the baggage and the weight and the heaviness that we often bring to effort?
Does that begin by stepping away from it and taking that nap or learning a little bit about meditation? Is that one of the first things that you need to do? Or are you so wrapped up in the deadlines that stepping away means, you know, something's going to crash to the floor?
I mean, stepping away can be any number of things. It can be taking a walk. It can be meditation. It can be journaling. I do think it's important that we become aware of the little voice in our minds that's narrating our experience, often in a not nice way. Like, you really screwed that up. You're never going to get this. You're behind. This is taking too long. And often what we'll do to drown out that voice is do things like check our phones or some other maladaptive habit. But instead, if you can refocus yourself to what am I doing right now? What is important for me to do right now? Or take the nap or go for the walk or pet your dog or your cat. Mm. Just do something that feels, that really feels restorative and good on the inside, and then you'll have more to give and on the outside for your next task.
So I have a 16-year-old daughter. She's a sophomore. We'll go into that junior year, which I hear is sort of an epic year for high school students. And, you know, she's getting ready for her next AP test, the last one. She did very well, but I think she worked so hard on the last one and suffered so much during the preparation that mm-hmm. I think she's fused in her mind what you just said, that to really prepare for this well, it's got to hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, there will be a cost. And if she gives that cost, then she can repeat the high score that she did last time. And as a parent, you know, I look at that and I'm like, that's not what I want her to have the experience, that everything that is successful has this great pain, you know, attached to it. How do you sort of, as a parent, approach a student, you know, or as a teacher, a student who's in that space and thinks, you know, I have to do this. My plan is to study for 2 hours a night for this one class. When you see that's not realistic, you don't have 2 hours a night to study for one class. Where do you begin?
Well, the first thing is to make a list of the things that actually have to get done. Like there are practical steps, and then there's the meditate, the all of that. But in terms of really practical steps, what are the things that the student needs to accomplish in any given night? And then write out a schedule, write out every hour, and then how long you think each of the things will take, and then see if there really is the 2 hours there. And furthermore, it's been shown to be more effective to have shorter study bursts and then repeating it versus one long binge on studying. So maybe as opposed to doing 2 hours for one big block, doing 45-minute blocks, and you're saving a half hour, and it's probably more effective to boot. And ask her how she feels, or if it's a boy, sometimes the thinking word works better. But for a girl, how is she feeling? If she's feeling, she'll probably say something like, I'm okay. I'm fine. And then just let me do my thing. And you can back off if you're feeling defensiveness from her, or if she just needs a block. But that kind of like the scheduling, getting a real sense of what time is available to you, encouraging her to somewhere in that schedule in the 20-minute break. And why I love scheduling breaks, often we think of breaks as this long time that you can just do whatever.
Right.
But the problem with that is that often it either doesn't happen or you feel guilty when it's happening because you think that you should be working on the other things, or it just ends up not ending. So by scheduling the break in the same way that you would schedule time to do the math assignment or study for the AP test, you're giving yourself permission to take that time. There's nothing else that you need to be doing during that time. and you're able to really be present with it and enjoy it and allow it to come to an end so that you can get back to work and do the next thing that's productive. Because really, one of the things that I added to the new edition is this idea of letting go of goals that aren't serving you. Mm-hmm. Because when you're taking a test or just in life, we can become attached to goals without even realizing that we're prioritizing them. So take, for example, answering a challenging question correctly. It feels really good to answer the challenging question correctly, but it could also be costing you time that you could be putting towards other questions that are worth more points in total than that one question, that one point. So in the same way, another of the goals that I talk about is the idea of prepping more than anyone else that you know. Mm-hmm. That idea that, again, putting forth time or putting forth stress into a goal or into studying for a test is the thing that's getting you further along. When really, if you're stressed out, you're not going to be able to process the information as well. If you're tired, you're not going to be able to process the information as well. And so it's about putting forth time towards effective studying and not just putting forth time towards studying.
Right. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Erica Oppenheimer. She's the author of Acing It, A Mindful Guide to Maximum Results on Your College Admissions Test. Where do you struggle with this? The kids in Sioux Falls aren't in school today. Maybe they're listening. Send us a text at 956-SDPB if you want to ask Erica a question, or maybe you're a parent and you see your kids struggling with how they prepare for everything from the AP test to the college admissions exams and beyond. What question do you want to ask Erica Oppenheimer? And what's the website, Erica? Because there's lots of good information on your website, too. Let's make sure people have that.
The website is ericaoppenheimer.com, but an easy way to get there is acing.it. And that'll take you right to my website.
All right. We'll monitor our texts and see if anybody comes in with a question for you, 956-SDPB. And Erica, I'm wondering, what about the kids who just, they're not going to enjoy studying because they don't, maybe they're struggling a little more. They want to do well in the test. They want to go on to the next level of education. But it's not a topic that they particularly are engaged in. And they know they just have to do this one and get through it. How do they begin?
So I do think one of the things that in a lot of cases the education system can do better at is teaching students how to study. I think generally how it works is we just give students more and more material to study and trust that they'll get better at it. But mm-hmm. studying and learning information isn't necessarily intuitive for everyone. So it is important to have a few tools in your toolbox and techniques that you can do to actually learn the material. Or even what I referenced before, the idea of studying in bursts as opposed to studying in one long stretch of time. Like, that's the kind of thing that's not necessarily intuitive for students. But if we can arm them with more specific tools and techniques, then maybe it will feel like a better experience for them. That said, I think that for a student who's struggled more, aside from just empowering them with new techniques and really engaging them in a conversation about how they're studying, I do think that it's really important that students connect to their sort of inner why. And that's something that you can guide them in terms of talking about what their ultimate dreams are and what are the steps that they need to do to get there. Because sometimes we can get satisfaction in an activity, not because it's directly the thing that we want to do, but because we know that it's leading us in that direction. So to give a really mundane example, I don't necessarily love doing laundry, but I do love the feeling of wearing clean clothes as opposed to the alternative. So in that sense, even if I'm not looking forward to doing laundry, I can focus on how it will feel when my laundry is done and I'm able to step out of the house feeling good. And so for a student, that might be the goal is that they want to be an activist for a cause that's important to them. And if for that student, they see a part of that journey as going to a great college, then keeping that in mind could motivate all of the things that need to happen in between now and then, which is a slightly different thing than I'll be happy when. Mm-hmm. It's more like, okay, it's more informing our current actions relative to that future goal. But it doesn't necessarily, again, it doesn't have to give up the happiness right now. It's right. just infusing more happiness and joy because we know that it's serving this greater mission.
Right. And there is a sacrifice in just the fact that you're studying at all. I mean, studying is more challenging than
it's
petting your dog.
Totally.
Yeah. Or looking at your phone.
It's not the most fun, but, and it's also another thing that you can do is find a classmate or a friend who you can study with. If you've, you have to be somewhat careful because you want to make sure that they're like-minded and that they're equally motivated. You don't necessarily want it to turn into just a giggle gab fest. But if you can find someone who's, you know, similarly minded and focused, then that could also be a way to learn more and direct your focus and attention on the task at hand.
When we talk about the SATs, ACTs, college admissions tests, when do you begin preparing yourself for those? When do you start?
There are two times that I think students tend to like. One is the summer before junior year, which is a little on the early side, but the nice thing about it is that they're able to really spend the time learning the material that is covered on the test. And the math section and the English section in particular really are evaluating specific content that you can learn. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first time, would be that time during the summer when you're not being, you know, there are no school conflicts. You can really spend time learning that content. The second time would be late fall or January of junior year, because for many students, the dream, the goal in terms of the tests is to be done by June, because then you can spend the summer and fall of your senior year focusing on college applications, the essays, all of the other fun things that are coming up for you. So, and it's possible to do both at once. And if someone's not started as early as I'm talking about, don't panic. You've got you do have plenty of time. You've got three tests in the fall that you can do as a senior and still have them count towards admissions. But particularly if you're interested in applying early to colleges, or if you want to have time to just focus on your essays, it's nice to get done by June.
So if they are preparing the summer of their sophomore year, have they learned the content that they're going to need to know yet? Or is it all going to be over their heads? And so this is what you're going to learn as a junior and a senior.
It's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. I mean, the truth is that, especially in the math section, some of the content is more advanced and they will be getting more of it in their junior year. But in terms of the English section, it's all basic grammar, but it's grammar that we're not necessarily aware that we're using as we're speaking or writing. So it's a little bit of both. I can say for one student who I just worked with who did prep over the summer and then took a break and resumed his prep in January, I asked him about it if he felt like it was too early, and he said that no, that it felt really good to, even if he was going to let it go for the fall and pick it back up in January, given that he was having those pressures of the school year, it felt really good to already have so much of it under his belt and to be familiar and comfortable with the science and reading sections and the English section, and then just be able to refine his skills on the math section with all of the knowledge that he'd accumulated the first semester of junior year.
All right. Let's talk about, let's just finish up with some of these, whole person testing and some of the mindfulness. And how do you approach this? Again, the book is called Acing It, A Mindful Guide to Maximum Results on Your College Admissions Test. I think you can apply it to way beyond college admissions tests from the AP. There's specifics about the college admissions test, but don't you think you could take this into your career too, of just any high pressure situation?
Yeah.
Self-talk and self-care and organization, time management. It's really,
I've had college students read the book. I've had, students prepping for med school exams read the book. So it has, it does definitely span beyond the SAT and the ACT. But beyond that, I've also, at my book party, my hairstylist who did my hair for the cover of the book was there, and she picked up the book and she was leafing through it, and she came up to me and she said, I was going to just give this to my nephew, but I think I need to read it. And so I'll buy him a copy, but I'm going to keep this one for myself. So I have this, there's a Taoist idea that what is in the one is in the whole. And I really do believe that that's true, that the lessons that we can glean from any one specific challenge can inform how we tackle other challenges. And that's why I think that the SAT and the ACT are a really cool thing to work on with students and engage them in a more mindful preparation for and undertaking, because all of that can inform how they feel when they're preparing for a play audition, or how they feel when they're approaching the college admissions process. it's a lot of the same voices in our head, the same challenges, the same discomforts. And so if you can learn how to deal with those in one area, it will just open up and inform how you deal with them in so many other areas of your life.
Have you gone back to your parents and given them any advice that they could have? You have pretty good parents, but are there things that they just didn't quite get when you were a student that they could have said that they're like, oh, yeah, that would have been helpful?
I do have good parents. Yeah. I don't really think that I have, but I'm also, you know, just like I was like any teenager. I mean, any teenager corrects their parent on their parenting
right.
at the time. It doesn't take until you're in your 20s or 30s to get feedback on how you're doing as a parent, I think, in most cases. But I mean, I'm very grateful to my parents. They did a good job. I mean, they did a good job from my perspective, but they're very supportive. And again, you referenced earlier the idea that a lot of the pressure can come from the outside. For me, I don't really feel like that was my parents putting the pressure on me. I feel like it very much was an internal drive and, you know, stress. But there are other things that do put those pressure on us, whether it's media articles about how, you know, selective colleges are becoming or, you know, the idea that you have to go to a specific school to get great results in life. There are other voices around it. And, you know, being a teenager and being in a little high school bubble where you're always comparing yourself to your peers and how they're doing and what achievements they're making or who's friends with who. It's stressful.
It's life.
It's life.
We began our time, telling great things about Tom Lubeck. We'll end with a shout out to your mom because she's a rock star. She's one of my favorite people. So,
aw, that's so nice.
Erica Oppenheimer is a South Dakota girl. She lives in New York City now. New York City, right?
Yep.
The book is called Acing It, A Mindful Guide to Maximum Results on Your College Admissions Test. The website, one more time, easy way to get there.
Acing.it.
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break. Erica, thank you.
Thank you so much.